We left off the previous year. We were using Tzroros as an example of, at least according to many Rishonim, of a halacha Moshe Mesinai, and using it almost as a springboard to try to understand some klalim that affect other halacha Moshe Mesinais as well. So we reference at the end of the year on Wednesday, back to the second of the Mamakomas for a moment, the Gemara was trying to figure out how we got to where we are. So everybody, with the exception of Sumchus, agrees that Tzroros pays Chatzi Nezek. The shaila is, where do we get there? How do we come to that? So we take a look at the end of the second of the Marmakomos. The Gemara says this, the second to last line from the bottom, the very end of the line. Hada Marava, Liolam Kegufa Dami. That the starting point of Tzroros is that Kocho is Kegufa Dami. The damage that takes place through an animal's force is basically, fundamentally, the same as the animal damaging directly, which means that our baseline should have been, our starting point should have been, you pay full damage, but there's a special halacha, which for now we're going to translate, like Rashi said, halacha Moshe Mesinai, of Chatzi Nezek Tzroros, which in a sense changes what the starting point would have been. So we're going from full damage, that's what I would have said, to Kamash B'lan, the halacha Moshe Mesinai, really Chatzi Nezek. Now the truth is that we could have gotten to that same point to a different way. Namely, we could have started out by saying, Amar Rava Liolam Lav Kegufa Dami, that really, logically, damage that takes place to a force is not like the animal trampling. The Kamash B'lan, the halacha Moshe Mesinai, that Afa Pichein, you pay Chatzi Nezek. So we could have gotten to the 50% mark in either direction. Either we could have come from 100%, knock it down, or we could have come from zero and knock it up. So how did the Gemara know, how did Rava know which direction to go from? So that's what led the Rush to believe, and if we just started to talk about it on Wednesday, where the Rush said as follows. So if you take a look, it's the Rush, the ninth of the Marmakomos. It's the fifth line from the bottom of the Rush, the end of the line. Dipshita de hilchasa le grue tashlumin asa. Says the Rush, it is obvious to everybody that whenever we have a halacha, namely a halacha Moshe Mesinai, that's coming to teach me something, it's always coming to be makel, it's always coming to chop down, it's always coming to knock something down. V'lo l'chayiv imach moshuai liftar. There was never ever find a halacha Moshe Mesinai that's trying to make life more difficult for you, trying to make you more responsible. U'mishim haki, the Rosh says, because of this basic principle, lo ka'am le'el, therefore the Gemara did not say, the Gemara we just read, lo dekuliyam ukoch alav kegufo dami, the Gemara did not go down the route to say that everybody holds that koach is not kegufo, v'chatzi nezek tzroros suchos ha'gemir la demishalim chatzi nezek, and the halacha Moshe Mesinai is coming in the direction to make you chayev. Why didn't the Gemara say that? Because it is obvious that halacha Moshe Mesinai is always coming to minimize rather than to add on, rather than to maximize, rather than to put tashlumin that doesn't exist. So that you saw that the Rush just saw within the sukkah of Tzroros, he now brings you a proof for. Kiryamina gabi sukkah, and we have a similar halacha, says the Rush, a similar proof, in Hilchas Sukkah, Asoi Hilchas Avagaras al Shlishis, V'yokimta Tefach. So the Rush makes reference to a sugya in Sukkah on Daf Vav Amud Beis. So let's just take a look for a moment at that Gemara and be able to appreciate where the Rush is coming from. So those of you who were with us last year may remember, hopefully fondly, some of the sugyas we learned last year. So if we take a look at the 10th of the Marmakomos, so the Gemara quotes a Braisa, Tana Rabbanim, Shtayim ki Hilchasar Ushlish Tafilu Tefach. The halacha is that a sukkah requires two walls, and it also requires a third wall, but that third wall need not be a complete wall. The third wall can merely be a tefach. So in theory, a sukkah can be built, you make two walls, make a third wall, the third wall only protrudes a tefach, and that would be acceptable. Then the Gemara quotes a dissenting view, Rabbi Shimon on Meshalash Kilchus on the Revisavil Tefach. And the Gemara says that Rabbi Shimon adds on one. He says you need three walls, and the fourth is a tefach. And the Gemara goes really, really hard to try to figure out what is the Nakuda Simachonis. What are they are? Where did any of these numbers come from? So basically, without getting into the intricacies of Masechta Sukkah right now, it all boils down to really one word. And that one word is a sukkos. The Torah says, Basukos Teishu Shiviz Yomim, Chalazach Yisrael Yeshu Basukos, Ki Basukos Hashavtos Beisrael. It says the word Basukos three times. Now the word Basukos three times, with the Torah Shemapeh explains to us, is actually referring to the Minyan HaMechitzas, the Minyan HaDefanos, to the number of walls that are necessary for a sukkah. The only thing that complicates the matter is that the word basukos is really b'lashon rabim. So it really has the connotation of more than one. So if you do your simple math, if it says basukos three times, and each one means a minimum of two, because it's a lashon rabim, then you have a six-fold, a strange shaped sukkah. So to make matters a little bit better for us is that the words basukos are written chaser, even though they're pronounced malay. If the Baal Kohen would get up and he would lay in basukas teshvu, you would have to correct him. But because the traditional tradition pronunciation is basukos teshvu, but if in the Sefer Torah it would say basukos, it would be a mistake. You'd have to correct it because it's one of these examples of a pasuk that's written one way. The word is written one way, but it's pronounced a different way. So it's written basukas, but it's read, it's pronounced basukos. Now that nuance is very, very important because basukas is a lashon yochid, basukos is a lashon rabim. To make matters even more complicated, only two out of the three times that it appears basukos is it written without a vav. The third time is actually written with a vav. So you can already begin to see every possible permutation of numbers here. On the one hand, each word is written, two out of the three words are written b'yochid. One is written b'rabim. They're all pronounced b'rabim. Does the halacha follow the way it's written? Does the halacha follow the way it's pronounced? So you can already begin to see why there's a machlokes of b'shim and the rabbanon that's floating around in the sugya. But again, we're not learning about sukkah right now. We want to extract one nekuda that's relevant for us. If you take a look at the third line, the 10th of the Rambam Kamos, at one point, finally the Gemara says, that there are three times left. There are three words that we are available to darshan. Shtayim ki hilchasan, v'asoy hilchasan, v'garas of the shlishis v'okwa tefach. That the starting point is that you need three walls based on your calculation of the numbers of one time, two times, three times, whatever it is. The starting point is you need three walls. Asoy hilchasa, the halacha comes. Now, what does that word hilchasa mean? So, right now we're going to plug in halacha moshe m'sinai because that's what the term hilchasa has meant in other cases. So, comes the halacha moshe m'sinai and chops off one of those walls and says, oh, that third wall doesn't have to be a complete wall. So, in a sense, based on the pure Tosh B'Chsav, it should have been three. The numbers of the word should have added up to being three. Kamash Balan, the halacha moshe m'sinai, and knocks it down. It's only 2.5 in effect. It's 2 plus a little bit of a tefach. So comes the rush and says, wait a second, how did the Gemara know to go in that direction? Maybe the starting point is you need three, and now the halacha moshe m'sinai adds it up, boosts it up a little bit. Rather than chopping it down to 2.5, maybe it's 3.5. Maybe the halacha is you need 3.5 walls, you need shlosha and verviyas afilu tefach. How did the Gemara know that? It says the rush, there must be in between the lines some kind of a principle that's developed here that says that any and every time you have halacha moshe m'sinai, it always goes to knock down rather than to go up. It's always l'hakol, never l'hachbir. So the Rush is using this Gemara. Yeah, the Gemara never spells this out. The Gemara never tells us how do we know to go from 3 to 2.5 rather than from 3 to 3.5. But the Rush is reading into it. The Rush is guessing that this must be not a localized din hilchos sukkah. It must be some general principle that relates to all halacha moshe m'sinais, that halacha moshe m'sinais always knock down rather than go up.
Rabbi, anytime you talk about metrics, halacha l'moshe m'sinai used for metrics, I don't know how you can compare that to kula and chumrah, because every metric is more than something below it and less than something above it.
Very good, excellent, totally. But the starting point is, the question is, where do you start from? It's all a question of where your baseline is. So if your starting point is you need three walls, based on the calculation of the psukim, it says basukas, 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 1, 2, 3, whatever you got to that magic number, the starting point is three. Now we have in front of us this halacha moshe m'sinai that says tefach. So I have on the one hand, I have the Torah Shemichsav that's pointing in the direction of three walls. I have a halacha moshe m'sinai that's pointing in the direction of tefach. Which direction do I go? So how do I plug in that halacha moshe m'sinai into the picture that's emanating from Torah Shemichsav? So logically, there are two ways. Either you say, well, you need three intact walls, and a wall means 7 tefachim tall, 7 tefachim wide, it's got to be a real full wall. So I need three walls to start with. And then, to satisfy the requirements of the halacha moshe m'sinai, I throw on a fourth wall for good luck. Now, the fourth wall doesn't have to be a big wall, it's got to be a tefach. So that would have been a logical approach to this sugya. But the Gemara didn't do that. The Gemara did the exact opposite. The Gemara said that I keep my baseline of three, but rather than adding on a fourth wall, I chop down one of the three walls, and I say, one of the walls is good enough, it suffices to be with the tefach. So that was the Rush's question above a comment is, how did Chazal know that secret? Where did that secret come from? That I have a choice of going this direction or that direction. How do I know to go the kula rather than the chumrah? So there must be that part of the system of halacha moshe m'sinai is, or that they're noted, that they always point in the direction of being the kula. That's the Rush's guess. It doesn't say it in the Gemara. That's the Rush's guess of a sechah sukkah. So now the Rush is saying, now it makes a lot of sense in Hilchas Tzoros as well. Because in Hilchas Tzoros, we also find a very similar type of thing. You're right, it's not identical. This is metrics, this is Tashlumin, you're right, it's not identical. But the common denominator is Kulas versus Chumras. So just as in Hilchas Sukkah we find that Chazal went Lekula, so too in Hilchas Mavakam, in Hilchas Tzoros, we find the same phenomena. That we have to determine what is the story of kicking up rocks. Is this regal, is this not regal? So I could have said, it's not regular, it's not chayv, it's zero. Comes Allah Barsina and says, Afa b'chein, you have to pay halfway. What do I say now? That it must be regular, kochu is kagufo dami, and Allah Barsina is lahakil. So the Rush said, how did Chazal know the second way? Rabbi says the second way. It must be the Gemara Shitaso in Masechah Sukkah. That's the Rush's contribution to the sugya. Now, of course, there are a few conclusions we have to draw from this Rush. First and foremost, the Rambam would look at this Rush and would say, I don't understand the language that the Rush is talking about. Because the Rush is developing some grandiose klal in Hilchas Halacha Moshe Mesinai. The Rambam would stop and say, wait a second, this is not even Halacha Moshe Mesinai. Tzoraris is a pasuk. What's the pasuk? I don't know what the pasuk is. Somewhere in the last 2,000 years, there was a source, there was a pasuk, there was a basin that figured out the din of Tzoraris. Hilchas HaGemirah, according to the Rambam, doesn't even mean Halacha Moshe Mesinai. It cannot mean Halacha Moshe Mesinai, as we spoke about earlier in the week, since there's a machlokes, and Sumchus denies it, according to the Rambam, whenever there's a denial of one Tana, of something, that's a dead giveaway, that it's not Halacha Moshe Mesinai. I didn't say it's not a deraisa, I didn't say it's not a pasuk, I didn't say it's not a gemirula, but Halacha Mesinai, it's not. So according to the Rambam, that we're not even dealing with Halacha Moshe Mesinai here, how in the world is the Rush telling me a klal that any and every time you have Halacha Moshe Mesinai, here's the direction you go in. What the... We're not even talking about that sugya. So according to the Rambam, the Rush is learning the wrong sugya. So that's Ha'ara number one. Ha'ara number two that we can make, and it's not a kash on the Rush, just a point according to the Rush. When the Gemara uses the phrase that Asi Hilchasa V'garsal Shlishas, the din of Shlishas Afilu Tefach, the Rush is learning that the source for that principle of Shlish Tefilu Tefach is Halacha L'Moshe Mesinai. If it wasn't, if it was based on something else, then the Rush's general klal would also be absurd. How could the Rush develop this klal? All Halacha Moshe Mesinai is a lekula, and I'll give you the proof positive, is that Halacha Moshe Mesinai of Shlish Tefilu Tefach, the Rush is obviously assuming that the rule of Shlish Tefilu Tefach is in fact Halacha Moshe Mesinai. So I'm not even sure that that's true. What leads me to believe that that may not necessarily be true? So that's the Gemara in Sukkah in the 11th of the Mar Mekamos. The Amar Rabbi Chiya Bar Ashi Amar Rav, the Gemara in Sukkah, the family Beis, Shiurin, Chatzitzin, and Mechitzin, Halacha Moshe Mesinai. The Gemara says that there are three categories that are pure Halacha Moshe Mesinai. There are many, many other categories of Halacha Moshe Mesinai, but these three were somehow put together by Rav. There are three distinct areas of Halacha that all the details, everything we know about them, are Halacha Moshe Mesinai. What are they? Shiurin, Chatzitzin, and Mechitzin. What do those words mean? So Shiurin. How do you know the shiur of a kezayis? Who told you that you have to eat a kezayis and matzah? But somebody sat down and figured this out one day. This is pure Halacha Moshe Mesinai. How do you know that the shiur achilah yom kippur is X? And how do you know that the shiur tumas kalim is a shiur kerib matziribon? And how do you know that the shiur of this is a kebetzin? How do you know? These are all Halacha Moshe Mesinai. None of this was made up. None of this is the Rabbanan. These are all pure Halacha Moshe Mesinai. Ishmi piyish ad Moshe Rabbeinu. It's interesting, there's a tshuva in the Ga'onim that says that why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu give a shiurim based on eggs and based on olives and based on fingers and based on tefachim? Why didn't he give us, in a sense, almost like measurements? Why didn't he give us more objective measurements rather than this funny way of, I'm going to walk around with an olive and I'm walk around with an egg in my pocket and I'm walk around? Why didn't he give us like measurements? Like we would talk about standard measurements. So the Ga'onim say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to give us measurements that are going to be there forever and ever, that are never going to change. He said, you know, numbers, measurements, they change by the whim. It used to be called the foot, now we don't call it foot, we call it metrics. Things change, cultures change, and different standards of measurements develop. But olives, the Gaonim say, an olive is always an olive. An egg, from the Sheish Rebracious, is an egg. A finger is a finger, nothing ever changes. So it's interesting, that Shuvah Gaonim has to be understood in light of the fact that many Acharonim write that the eggs changed. The eggs that we have are a little bit less than the smaller eggs, which we know throws into total chaos all the shiurim, all the matzah that we eat at the Seder. We're eating twice as much matzah that we probably should be eating because we're all assuming that all shiurim are off, that everything is half the size of what it used to be. So it's interesting, in the shiurim, somehow it doesn't say that. 1,000 years ago, they didn't say that. So I don't, that's an interesting discussion for another time, another place. But whatever it is, these shiurim of Kazai, Yisik, Beitza, these are ish pisha Moshe Rabbeinu. These are after Rabbanon. These are not based on Psukim. These are ish pisha Moshe Rabbeinu. So then the Rav gives you a second area of halacha, that's ish pisha Moshe Rabbeinu, Hilchos Chatzitzin. The fact is, the details of Hilchos Chatzitzin, when a person goes to the mikvah. So the Gemara tells us in Maseches Sukkah, Maseches Erev, and Maseches Nida, that the fact that when a person goes to the mikvah, they cannot have a chatzitza, that's a pasuk in Chumash. The pasuk says, for rochatz is kol basar b'mayim, so shelo yedov chotzeis b'nolim b'mayim. You're not allowed to have anything separating between you and the water. So comes the Tarshu HaPeh, the Lach Moshe Sinai, and now fleshes out a little bit. What does that mean? It means a person goes to the mikvah and there's a speck on their body, so the whole tefillah is no good. How much is a chatzitza? How do you measure whether something is a chatzitza or not? So the Gemara tells us that there was a tradition, ish v'pishan Moshe Rabbeinu, that there are two conditions that are necessary in order for somebody to constitute a chatzitza on a level of deraisa. Number one, it has to be a rove of the person's body. And number two, it has to be what's called a davar hamakpid. It has to be something that people care about, people want to remove. If both of those conditions are present, then we have a chatzitza on a level of deraisa, then the tefillah is no good in the Torah. If those conditions are not present, the Minat Torah, everything's okay. But the Rabbanon, the later generation, they added on and said, if either one of those conditions are present, it's too risky, it's too dangerous. And therefore, mid the Rabbanon, they declared the Hilchos Chatzitza applies if either or of those conditions are present. If neither of the conditions are present, then it's not a problem even mid the Rabbanon. So again, we have three different levels of Hilchos Chatzitza. There's Chatzitza deraisa, that's only if it's a Ruba HaMakbid. Then you have a Chatzitza deRabbanon, either a Rov She'en HaMakbid or a Miud HaMakbid. Then you have a Miud She'en HaMakbid, which is not a problem at all. Halach l'maisa for us, we almost never have a chatzitza deraisa. I have never ever had a shayla of a chatzitza deraisa for a very simple reason. Who in the world is going to go come and ask me a shayla about the mikvah and I'm covered from head to toe with something that I really, really want to remove, but I want to go to the mikvah first. Can I go or not? So that would be a deraisa. So if a woman went mudsliding 5 minutes before and she's covered with mud from head to toe and she's about to go take a shower, but before she takes a shower, she wants to go to the mikvah, that would be a problem deraisa. The chatzitzas that we have today are all examples of Mir HaMachbid. The raw shilas of, well, it's a very small thing. I have a bandage on, I got stitches on, I got a filling in, I got a this in, I forgot to get my lenses, I got the stuff in my ear, whatever. These are all shilas which are all miyutim. There's never ever a shilas in a row, it's always a miyut. And all the chatzitzas all revolve around one question. Is this a davar HaMachbid? Is it a davar She'en HaMachbid? So then there's a whole sukkahs and mishnayas and gemaras and mishnayas and shachanach. How do you define what's called Machbid? Does Machbid depend on you Machbid? Machbid depend on other people Machbid? Machbid depend on both maybe. What if a person is not Machbid now, but they will be Machbid an hour from now? What if a person is not Machbid now, be Machbid in a month from now? So then you have shailas about rings and about the rings that can't come off and stitches that can't come out and bandages that are on. All of these shailas all revolve around chatzitzas derabbanan. There's never ever going to be a chatzitzas deraisa shaila. So I'm not saying you have to be, don't put it in, have to be machbid on it. You have to be careful about the dinim derabbanan also. But all the shailas that we have today are all ending up being shailas that are only on a level of derabbanan. Because of this halacha Moshe Mesina, the chatzitzas only apply when you have both conditions that are met. Then you have the third area of halacha, that's also halacha Moshe Mesinai. That's what Rav concludes in the end of our makom number 11. U'mechitzin halacha Moshe Mesinai. The details of Hilchos Mechitzas are halacha Moshe Mesinai. What are the details of Hilchos Mechitzas? What are they that make up the rules of Hilchos Mechitzas? So the Gemara, the 12th of the Ramakamas, fills you in. Ki asai hilchasa, that the three basic parts of halacha Moshe Mesinai of Hilchos Mechitzas are three categories. The good, the loved, the dofen akuma. So good means stretching of mechitzas. Namely, when I have a mechitza that's present, I have the right sometimes to make the mechitza extend. Theoretically, you know, in the world of imagination, I can extend the mechitza all the way up. Or if I have mechitza somewhere, sometimes I can extend the mechitza all the way down. So this is a very, very important principle that we use, both in Hilchos Sukkah and Hilchos Erevin. We'll give just a very, very quick example of it. Let's say a person builds a sukkah and they have a mechitza that's 10 tefachim tall. So the mechitza ends over here, and now they have schach going across the top. But the schach is not resting on the mechitza, it's 10 feet up. So the Mishnah says that's okay. The Mishnah says that as long as the schach is above the walls, that's perfectly okay. How does that work? Where's the connection? I have mechitzas here and I got schach up there. What's the connection between the two? So the answer is this is a halacha mashina called good asik. That once I've identified, once I've created a 10 tefach mechitza, then the halacha mashina gives me a dotted line and it's as if it goes all the way up the shemayim and it bumps into the schach and that's okay. If the schach is more than 20 amos above the ground, that's a whole other problem. That's the first mission sukkah, but the other tactical reasons. But as long as the schach is in its right place and it's above, directly above the wall, that would be acceptable. That's a halacha masidah called good asik and ochuz mechitzas. There is a tricky halacha called good achis, which is again beyond the scope right now. That's when you have a mechitza present. Now you want to shoot the mechitza down. So that gets a little bit more complicated. Sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't. But there is a halacha masidah called good asik. Then the second halacha Moshe Sinai is lavud, that there's a special halacha Moshe Sinai that breaks and breaches in a wall less than 3 tefachim are considered to be sosum, are considered to be as if they're closed up. So let's say, for example, I'm building a wall for like for Chashabas for a second, make it even easy. In order to build a wall for Chashabas, I have to surround myself with different mechitzas in order to be permitted to carry there. So what if I have a wall, but I have a lot of breaks in the wall? So I have a 3-foot wall, and then I have an 8-foot break. 1 foot of wall, then a 9-foot break. 5 feet of wall, then another 12 feet of break. That's what the Mishnah in the first parak of Eirvin says, that that's what's called the Paris Meruba Ala Oimid. If you have more breaches than wall, so that's a problem. That's a big, big problem. And that disqualifies the mechitza, according to the overwhelming majority of the Rishonim, that disqualifies the mechitza midaraisa. Whenever you have Paris Meruba Ala Oimid, so it's not there. That area is not a Rishus HaYochid, that sukkah is not a sukkah. Whenever the halacha would require a mechitza, so the absolute principle, number one, the Mishnah says it has to be omen merubah laparetz. That is not negotiable. Then there's another din, the Mishnah says, what if you have omen merubah laparetz? You have, right smack in the middle, a very, very large break. You have a break more than 10 amas. So totality of the mechitza, say I have the mechitza goes 500 feet, so 450 of those feet are standing, so I have omen merubah laparetz, but I have a huge gap of more than 10 amos, so the Mishnah says that will also disqualify mechitza, a piritz of yeser amos. So that's a machlekes poskim. Is that a din derais, is that a din derabanan? That's an important sugya in the first breath of Erev, again, not for now. Remember Rabbi Willig once told me that, very often, all of us never do a... that people have ups and downs in their avodas Hashem. There are times we're a little bit better in our learning and our davening, times a little bit shvacha. So that's natural. It's part of the course. So he said that you have to be careful in life, that it's omen merubah laparetz, that as long as for the most part you're on the higher end, things are going well, so even though you have piritzas here and there, that's okay. But you have to also be careful that even though you have a piritza, and a piritza is okay, you have a little break here and there, you have to make sure each and any given piritza is not too big. So that even a person's whole lifetime, 120 years, so 61 of the years they were up, but in the middle of those 61 years, there were big, giant, huge piritzas, that's also a problem. So you have to be careful that for the most part, your avodas Hashem is on the up, and basically you don't have any great, great piritzas. I remember one year in the yeshiva, so I spoke in the Beis Medrash on Chanukah, I guess in the Sichas Musa that year, so I spoke about Ufartzu Chomos Migdalai. I spoke about Pirtzes. I said that everybody has Pirtzes. There are always Pirtzes here and there and that, but it's Hashem. But you got to be careful. Pirtzes are not overwhelming, and any given Pirtzes is not too big either. So the Mishnah says that an exception to everything we just said is as follows. What if I want to build a mechitza for Shabbos purposes? I'll put a pole in the ground, and then I'll have a break 2.5 tefachim. A little bit shy of 3 tefachim, I'll put 2.5 tefachim, another pole in the ground. Then I'll break another 2.9999 tefachim, stick another pole in the ground. Another 2.9, another pole in the ground. So the Mishnah says, that's okay. That mechitza is perfectly exact. I can carry the lechem chila on Shabbos. So the Gemara says, how can I carry that? It's paritz merubah laimed. I have more airspace than standing. So the Gemara, so the Mishnah says, no, that's not called paritz merubah laimed, because the halacha Moshe Mesini of Lovud connects the dots. Since every break is less than 3 tefachim, so we view it as if it's plugged up, as if there's this literal standing wall there, and you have no piritzas at all. You have a legamri oimed. So that's, again, so there's a basic din of omen merubah laparetz. There's a psul of piritza of tenamas, but then there's another din that trumps everything, that if it's within 3 tefachim, so lavud is command to sasam davi. How do you know? Where did that come from? Who made this up? It's a mishnah in the first brach of Erevin. All of these klalim all appear in the first mishnah, the first brach of Erevin. So where did all this come from? So the answer, this is also halacha Moshe Sinai. That's the halacha Moshe Sinai called the lavud. So the Gemara is identifying so far that when Rav made the statement, mechitzas halacha Moshe Sinai, so Rav meant good is included, good asik is included, and lavud is included as well. I think I've told over the story, I don't know if I told it over in this context, that when I was a little boy, so the first time I learned the halacha of lavud, so I learned it from a film strip that I was a kid in SAR, so every year before Sukkot, they would show us the same Torah Masoria. Those who remember those film strips, you had to press the, just like high tech today, right? Just like in the schools today, you had to teach would press the thing down, and then a new picture would show up on the thing, and half the time it didn't work, and then there were always the lights within, the kids would start making funny, you know, funny finger motions, you know, donkey's ears and things. That was the high tech of the early 1970s. So every year they show us, there was only one film strip, they put out one film strip about Ochos Sukkah. So every year they had a picture of Lovud. They always showed us, one of the things you have to know is that if you have a break in the wall, it's okay. Why? We had to know that at the age of six. I don't know, Lovud, that was one of the things. Then 6 months later, before Pesach, they would show us the other Torah Masorah films about how to get ready for Pesach. So they would always show us how to kasha the oven. So again, not that most of us were kashering ovens at the time. And they would always talk about libun. So every Sukkos was lavud, and every Pesach was libun. And as a kid, I could never remember which was which. I knew it had something to do with a lavud and a vav and a vase and a vav, but I never remembered whether you have to have a three tefachim break in the oven or whether you have to kasha the sukkah. I knew it had something to do with lavud. That was for years and years. It took me a while, so I got it straight. Didn't say lavud and libun. Okay. They were very laid back, and I said they didn't give us any tests or anything. They didn't want to pressure anybody, so I never had to know what the answer was. Okay, I have to cut that off the. So now the Gemara is listing off all the halachos, sidus, mechitzas, mechitzas. So we have good asik, we have lovud, and now the Gemara throws in a third one, the bottom of the 12th of Rambam Kamas, the dofen akuma. Also a whole sugya in the first brach of Masechah Sukkah that I have a schach on top of the sukkah, and there's a significant amount of that schach puzzle. I have a lot of schach puzzle up there. That's the bad news. The good news is that it's all situated against the wall. So I have my sukkah over here. I have my schach, I've got metal planks over here. And then my wood, my bamboo, starts over here. Even though there's a lot of schach puzzle there, the Mishnah says there's a special halacha called dofen akuma, that as long as the schach puzzle is less than daat amos away from the wall, whatever's within the proximity of daat amos to the wall is just considered to be part of the wall. We just bend the wall over, make believe that instead of the wall going straight, and this being the schach, we just play a game and we say, well, this is the wall. Whatever it looks like schach, that's not schach puzzle, that's just wall. You can't sit there because you can't sit under a wall, but the fact that there's 3.5 amos of schach puzzle, that doesn't bother us. That's the halacha mashzin I called dofen akuma. So literally bent the wall. So these are the three halacha mashzin that are included in the phrase mechitzen. So we have good, we have lovud, we have dofen akuma. Now, the question is obvious. There is a fourth one that should be there that is not. What is the fourth one? The fact that a wall of a sukkah can only be a tefach, shlish tefil tefach. The fact that there's a special halacha moshe mesinai of shlish tefil tefach, doesn't that belong on the list? Because after all, the Rosh is making a whole case that whenever you have a halacha moshe mesinai, it's always lakula, proof positive being this case of shlish tefil tefach. But wait a second, if the Rosh is so right that is halacha moshe mesinai, why isn't that on the list? Doesn't that indicate something for us? We have to go back to this sugya. Hopefully, next week, we have to go back to this sugya, this nekuda in the sugya in Sukkah Daf Vav, and try to figure out why is it not on the list. What does that tell us about this halacha, potentially Moshe Mesina or not, and how does it impact back on Tzoros? So even though we are theoretically learning Tzoros now, we're really learning today's sugya is called Halacha Moshe Mesina. It means what direction do Halacha Moshe Mesina go? So it's hard to answer that question unless you're sure that you're talking about Halacha Moshe Mesina. So the Rosh was pretty convinced that Tzoros was Halacha Moshe Mesina. The Rambam was far from convinced. The Rosh was pretty convinced that Shlish Tefil Tefach is Halacha Moshe Mesina. We're questioning that now based on the simple reading of the Gemara. So you can only develop a klal of all the pieces of the klal, all right? So we're going to have to go back to that Rosh and re-question that Rosh, Mitzvah. But I guess it's a little bit appropriate that to be learning a sugya of a Hilchos Sukkah, Dafka and Chanukah. My higher sukkah, my inyan sukkah, Hitzel Chanukah. So we already know from the Gemara in Shabbos, it tells us according to Beis Shammai, why do we count down? We have to go up. Why does Beis Shammai go from 8 down to 1? So the Gemara says, Kinegat Pari Achag, the same way the Karbanos of Sukkot, so they go down, so too the days of Chanukah, the numbers of candles go down also. Now, we don't pass like that for technical grounds, because Malam and Kodesh was reading, but what was that all about? What does Chanukah do with Sukkot? So there's a fascinating comment of the Yerucha Shulchan, where the Yerucha Shulchan writes that that one of the many, many answers to the question, why you have 8 days of Chanukah if the Nes was only for 7 days. So Rechav Shulchan quotes an old, old source which says that Chazal, when they instituted Chanukah, they dafka wanted it to be 8 days because they wanted to be Ke'en the Yontif of Sukkos. My high Ke'en the Yontif of Sukkos, because the longest Yontif of the year is 8 days. The 7 day Sukkos and the 8 day Shmini Atzeres. And they wanted that should be the model of Chanukah. Why? Because they felt so bad. For 3 years, the Beis Mikdash was in shambles. There was no Aliyah Rekel. There was no celebration of Sukkos. There was no Nischamayim. There was no Lulav of Mikdash. The whole Yontif of Sukkos was up in smoke for 3 years. So when they came back and they reinstituted Chanukah, so they wanted, we should have a shtickle like Teshlumin. We should have a little bit of a makeup for Sukkos. So therefore, when according to Bishama, they instituted Halakas Neiros, they had their eyes on the ball. They had their eyes on the Yontif of Sukkos. So there's a lot more to that Derech Drush. I don't know. Maybe in Shul the Shabbos will have a chance to talk about it a little bit. The deeper esoteric connection between Chanukah and Sukkos, but at least for our purposes, it worked out that we learned the Rangatun of the Sugya of Masecha Sukkah Dafka on the Yom Chanukah. On Tuesday, Chanukah will be over. We'll go back to the Sugya of Masecha Sukkah.